Hi, my name's Peter, and I'm an alcoholic. Wow, I'm not supposed to get nervous. I've never seen so, you know, they told me there were going to be alcoholics here, but I didn't know such posh alcoholics were going to be here. You know, I'm from the north of England, and it's a different crowd, I have to tell you. Now, I live in Santa Barbara, which is a wonderful place. On the plane today here, thank you, Carol, for inviting me this. I'm very happy to be here. On the plane today, I read, I think Michael Caine has this wonderful book. He's always amused me because he's English and I find it very amusing. In his book, he makes a reference to his first acting lesson. Was his mother sent him to the front door to tell the rent man that she was out. And I remember that was my first acting lesson. I come from one of those wonderful English families who basically hide everything from everybody. I mean, my mother and father's parents were from Ireland, and one of the things that they hide very well is the fact that they're actually Irish. Because it's only in America that being Irish is kind of glamorous. In England, the last thing you want to admit is you're Irish, because it's like painting a bullseye on your forehead. You know, you don't want to do any of that stuff. So my parents taught me right from the beginning that I could do anything I wanted to do. They didn't tell me it had to be legal either. That was never a requirement. Which, not that they weren't very good Catholics, but unfortunately, I'm from a generation, we are all from a generation where it's not a requirement to be kind and nice to people, really. I think what happened is that people, specifically people of my generation who grew up with me in Liverpool and Manchester, we were taught that we had to take it, you know, and it was theirs for us to take, and if anybody ever wanted it, we would have to fight them. You know, this is my hill, my house, my wave, keep away. And we were all told that there was like a natural space that nobody was ever allowed into. And that caused me a lot of trouble. You know, I learned, like, in Liverpool, to fight with my feet. I was the best runner. I could run from trouble better than anybody, you know. And I built a reputation as being very good at avoiding trouble. You know, I could start it, but I was never there. And, you know, what happened was it appeared to be very glamorous. You know, all my heroes were drunks. And incredibly, now I think of it, everybody that I admired as a child was a drunk. You know, they were either authors or they'd cut their ear off or some insane behavior. You know, they were all junkies. You know, they could dance better because they were doing speed, or they were Irish poets or Welsh miners' sons who drank themselves into oblivion. And I wanted that so badly. I was afraid that I would fail at being an alcoholic. My fear that I wasn't going to be an alcoholic. Maybe I would escape. And I really wanted to be a dangerous, deadly person. You know, and the reality was I was Pat Boone trying to be Jimi Hendrix. And, you know, and I didn't want to be Pat Boone, and you know what? I still don't want to be Pat Boone. I don't think Pat Boone wants to be Pat Boone. Just to make sure, when he talks about Herman the artist, you don't mean Pee Wee Herman, the German artist. This isn't the artist formerly known as Pee Wee Herman, just for those people who don't remember the 60s. They say if you remember the 60s, you weren't there. Incredibly, I remember it. You know, but I guess I didn't swallow or something. But, you know what happened to me anyway, simply is, just so I can get on with my story, I feel like a comedian with no material here. It's like Rickles without people to be rude to. But when I was 13, my school, I was doing great at school, you know, I was like, they were all Catholics and they were easy, you know, and I could amuse everybody, I was a comedian, I could say, excuse me, Father, run that Immaculate Conception bit by us one more time, and I got the lads in the class to think I was kind of cool. And really, it was just, I guess I didn't really feel very confident at just being Peter Noon, so I invented this sort of, you know, I even, like, I saw this picture, and still to this day they have to say in American buildings, please don't put your feet on the walls. Now, why, you know, English people thought, why would anybody want to put their feet? It's not, you know. And then we realized it was all from like a poster from a movie where there's a guy, I think it's James Dean, is standing with his foot on the wall, like this, smoking a cigarette. Oh man, that was that move. That changed my whole life. I started to stand in the school toilets like... I started to want to be somebody else. And I was 13 and my school invited us to go. It was pretty insane, really. 200 boys and 200 girls. Catholics. On this ship of fools to go to Africa and to study on this ship and go to Africa. And there were many African boys in my school, and they'd really got me nuts because they were so smart. They really pissed me off, these guys, because they were they were from Nigeria and they knew everything, and they kicked our asses at cricket and soccer. They were the best, these guys. But we're all on this boat, right? And we got to this place at the very beginning of the cruise. I went out with these guys in a place called Coruña, which is La Coruña, which is in Spain. And I got drunk. And I got so drunk that I was unconscious. And these guys got me back to the ship, you know, with no memory of that thing. And that was day one, and I was the school hero. This made me the school hero, you know, this guy in the shower with, you know, being sprayed with all the... Noon went off the boat and he got drunk, he got shit-faced. Wah! So I did it every night for the next 30 years. Insane stuff. But you know, I really liked what it did to me, you see, because I was this sort of really good Catholic kid who wanted to do bad stuff, you know. And you know, whenever there was a choice between good and bad, that wasn't a choice to me. Let's do the bad shit. That's where the fun happens. The good guys are in the choir. You know, with Father Riprap, and they stay late, and I want to be in detention with the cool guys. Actually, this room reminds me a lot of detention, looking at you now. You aren't the guys that went to my school, are you? Yeah, you are. But you know, what happened was that became my life, and incredibly, I decided that not much could be done by me without a drink. Like if it was an audition to, you know, to get a part in a movie or something, or on the television, if I had a drink, then I could be more like the person that they wanted me to be. Not who I was, but I would then be able to trick everybody to think I was the guy that they were looking for. He's the one. Wow, look at him. He's insane. I wasn't insane. But I could do it. And, you know, I was consciously, like, hanging out with, you know, from the... You know, I was in a band in the 60s. I came to America. I was on tour in America when I was 15. And I was touring America, and I was always, like, a little bit off. And... You know, I mean, it helped that, like, my songs had, like, second verse same as the first, because you didn't really need to concentrate for very long, you know what I mean? Whenever there was a doubt about what was coming up next, I'd just go, second verse same as the first. And I got away with it. I led a charmed life. I led a charmed life. And I would get on the Ed Sullivan Show, and I would get drunk before I went on the Ed Sullivan Show, or I'd smoke a spliff with the Stones. And I would do all these and things, and then, but then I could, Ed Sullivan, oh, you're a Catholic. I was stoned. You're a Catholic. Meet me tomorrow at St. Patrick's. Come and meet me at Delmonico's. And I acted, sure. At night I was with the Stones. In the morning I was at St. Patrick's with Ed Sullivan. It seemed completely natural to me. Because it was all an acting job. The whole thing, my whole life was an acting job. I was just, nothing was real. There was no real stuff because, first of all, what am I doing in this band here? I'm supposed to be at school. You know, this can't be real. They would say to me, would you like to go to the Philippines? Nowadays, people say, how much money is there? We just said, yeah. No thought about money. That was for, like, old people. Money and mortgages and insurance policies. One of the requirements to be in my band was that you could not have a mortgage. Or any of those things, or like a golf club was like, oh. Because we wanted to live this life of these rebels. And, you know, bit by bit, I would watch all these people die. All my friends started to die, you know, like Wonder Stone. Suddenly you go, the guy weighed 300 pounds and 260 of it was water. You know, this guy, have you noticed how drunks always want to go swimming? lots of my friends have been swimming when they're drunk. And it's not, swimming is not one of the things you want to do when you're really drunk. And a lot of people have died that I know because, not from the glass of wine that they just had, but from the years and years of abuse of, like, pretending to be someone. That's exhausting, man. It's exhausting to be somebody else all the time. It's really tiring, you know, because the whole thing in England is called a front. You have a front that you have to show to everybody all the time, you know. And then you're sitting in your room and you go, what the hell's wrong with me? Why am I, you know, I'm exhausted because all the time I didn't even do that. Well, maybe I did. I can't remember. So I began to get tired. But, you know, I'm a pretty resilient cheat and liar. So I got away with, like, 30 years of being Herman or somebody. And I used to wonder what was wrong with me. People, I didn't fit. Unless I had a drink, I didn't go. I couldn't fit. I was the wrong... I didn't know where to put my hands. I didn't, you know, I was like... I didn't know how to go. I couldn't go to dinner, and I'd have to have a drink before I went to dinner because then I'd be able to talk. And, of course, we all know where that goes. Eventually, I needed a drink in the morning. You know, where the real guys drink. Those are the real cool guys. I don't know if you're flying on a plane, you go like to one of those clubs at the airport. You know the real guys are going to be there. The real men are going to be there, like with the Bloody Mary. The most disgusting drink ever, isn't it? My dad told me that would help. So, you know, I'm there and I'm going, what's wrong, what's wrong, what's wrong? And bit by bit, you know, bit by bit, like all alcoholics really, is terrible things started to happen to other people when I was drinking. Terrible things started to happen to other people. And I was now slowing down. I wasn't able to run from trouble quite as good as I had done when I was like this teenager in Liverpool and, you know, hanging out with the cool guys. Now I'm getting cool. Some of these big guys are catching me. And, you know, I was good at negotiating, but, you know, it's not a good place to be in. Constant trouble. And I'm lucky, you know, I've been married to the same woman for 30 years. I've got this woman who's managed to, like, some insane reason, want to take care of me. And, you know, it's mutual, you know, it's a mutual thing, but, you know, we had a daughter. We'd been married for a long time. We had a daughter, and I started to lie to my daughter. You know, she's only two and stuff like that. Because she was there. I mean, my wife was used to me talking nonsense. So I'd always talk nonsense. The first day I ever went out with my wife, I fell asleep at dinner. I mean, it isn't really funny. I mean, you have to work really hard on a woman if you've fallen asleep at dinner. And I basically chased her for a long time until she realized that I was kind of serious about this, even though I'd started very badly. But, you know, other times it's not good to fall asleep, but we're not going there because of some newcomers falling asleep. But I found myself, like, making very bad choices with the truth, you know. Like, and now my daughter, when you say you're going to a meeting and they think you're going to a bar, or you say you're going out and they're not sure if you're, like, going to show up for a week, because I did that thing, you know, like the insane behavior of thinking that everything is forgivable. Because it wasn't me, you see, because I had this excuse. Whenever, like, any thought came along, how do you deal with not thinking? It's simple, isn't it? You know, you have a drink or you do anything to avoid thought. So I'm starting now to be like a complete, my whole life is an alibi. I don't even know what I've told people to cover for myself now. Now I'm getting in really big trouble because I don't know what I told you. I have to now have a whole conversation with you before I can remember what I told you about what I did last time. Now I'm getting really exhausted. Now this is exhausting when you walk into rooms with people and you don't know how you know them. And you know, I was a bright kid. And now I'm like... completely bewildered. I mean, bewildered. And people started to feel sorry for me. And that isn't a good thing for a guy who thought he was the coolest thing since sort of sliced Elvis. You know, and people start to feel sorry for me, and I'm lying to my own daughter, you know, who I, like, you know, it's like God gave my wife and I this gift of a child, and now I'm like, so I go, oh, please, what do I do? And, you know, somebody came up to me, and they told me what I had to do. And, you know, being the smartest guy on the planet, I figured I could figure a way to sort of just go long enough. You know, I could do, like, the quick study. You know, I'll go in there and I'll get enough information so that I'll be able to con everybody. Because that's the only thing I'd ever done, you know what I mean? I mean, I sold 50 million records on a confidence trick. So to deal with you or God would be kind of easy, wouldn't it? Real easy. So I decided that I would go along and I would sit there with the guys and... you know, I got the sponsor, I did the whole thing, and, you know, he told me I had to have a commitment and all this stuff, and I'm going, okay, oh, jeez, can I be the treasurer? You know, because I'm not good, you know, I drop dishes and things. Don't let me near the coffee because I spill it and people get scalded, and, you know, I'm really in the band. So, you know, and I would sit there, and nothing made any sense to me because I hadn't got the think, the one word that I'd missed was the thinking, and I realized that my whole life, what I'd always avoided was that word. I didn't want to think. Think meant growing up and dealing with everything as it really is. And now suddenly I'm sitting there and I go, you know what? I'm going to have to deal with this thing because I'm listening to these people, these men and women in this meeting in Malibu and Santa Barbara, and I get it. And I'm going, oh, wow, that's what's wrong with me. I'm like her. I mean, she, you know, and him. They don't look like very cool people to me, but they're talking brilliant stuff. You know, it's like, lead with the... you have to tell the truth. It never occurred to me. Because once you've told all lies, it's really tough to go to the truth because you have to... fix all the past up, don't you? There it is. There's my program. You know, for now I'm here. I'm going, oh, well, I can't go any further with this because if I have to make amends, I have to tell everybody that the whole thing has been bullshit. You know, that I didn't really burn that woman's house down so people in Manchester would think I was insane. You know, that you mess with Peter Noon, burned your mother's house down. I never did it, but I took credit for it for a long time, and nobody messed with me. They liked their mother's houses. They had their eye on it for themselves one day. So now I'm sitting there, and I'm getting, now I figure out, you know, and everybody told me I'd like had quick study on the book, and I said, oh, they gave me an old one. Where's the new one? This is all like the 50s. Haven't they got a new big book? It's all these stories in the 50s in here. He said, no, that's the book. Oh, well, I better go and check it out again and maybe help him do a bit of a rewrite on this, you know. I'm a bit of a writer. You know, make it sort of fit for people like me. So I took it home and I checked it out and it was all about me. And So I started to, you know, I got into the thing. I liked the fellowship, you know. I would hang out with these guys. They'd have this seventh tradition, which I thought was like everyone goes out for a cigarette. And what are those other people doing in there? And that was the end of the meeting for me, because then I'd go out and meet all these really cool ex-musicians who were all like recovering. And you know, one day I was sitting in the thing and I realized how thick I was. It was the first day it occurred to me that I was actually kind of pretty dumb. Because first of all, like after like 69 days of not drinking, for the first time ever, I couldn't ever put a day together. There was no reason to put a day together. Why would you want to stop drinking? It's fine, isn't it? Well, how would I be able to sing if I didn't have a drink? I've never done it without a drink. So I thought, I'm going to give that a try, you know, and I never made it. For 15 years, I thought, it's probably best to go on stage straight tonight, because, you know, I've got a brand new band, and they're all 11. And you know what? I never could get it. I would get, like, really close. And I'd say, hang on a second, guys. And I would have, like, big drinks. Big drinks. Because, you know, the beer was, you know, beer and wine was stuff that you drank with your wife. And then you went out drinking. It's an English thing. So I'm sitting there and I'm seeing all these signs on the wall, and bit by bit I'm starting to get them. You know, after 69 days I go, ah, the sign over there, there was Big John. This guy had like 25 years and he was sitting over there, and I used to look at him because I thought he was cool, because he once did like a chat there with the young guys, and he was talking about how he'd been a salesman, and he'd had to go back to his boss and say, I've been stealing. And I said, what a schmuck. But I looked at him and said, he's pretty cool. I mean, that's must probably got a lousy program there. You know, I've got 67 days already, and I'm already ahead of him. You know, I would fix that some other way. I'd just write a check to the company, you know. But now I'm thinking. Now I'm thinking. I don't need to make amends and show everybody that I've, like, done all this stuff. I'll just... trickery. I'm still working that business, you know, like, I'll find a way of not letting anybody know what I'm really like. I'll just write a check to the IRS. Anonymous. They have no sense of humor, that English IRS, by the way. I don't... You know, Jim was sitting in front of this sign that I thought was some AA nonsense, you know, we are not responsible. And underneath, when he moved after 69 days, for your belongings became... The rest of the story became clear, you know what I mean? More was revealed to me. Aha, because I'd been sitting there, we are not responsible. Wow, I love that, man. That's kind of like something like Bob Dylan could work with that, you know what I mean? We are not responsible. Of course, there was more to it, and of course, there was more to everything. And every day when I wasn't behaving like the guy that everybody knew, I started to get more and more information that was useful. Not that I wanted any useful information, but it became more and more useful, and people started to notice how useful I was becoming. You know, to that, you know, I mean, I was actually acting like a citizen. You know, they had these stickers in Los Angeles that used to make me... I used to get in a rage, you know, like random acts of kindness. I'll give you a couple of random acts of violence, show you what those are like. You know, I mean, I'm more into the random. But I'm starting to go, that's probably nice to sort of like, you know, I'll stop pretending I've got a gun on the freeway, you know what I mean? You know, in LA, when people like give you the finger and everything, you sort of go, and they drive much quicker, or they get off the next exit and clear the freeway off for you. It's not very smart, because sometimes those other guys have got a gun, and their guns usually got bullets in it. And I was a good runner, but it's hard to outrun those Magnum 357 bullets. I've noticed that. They really catch you up. And I was starting to act nicely, and I'm going to these meetings, and kids, like 18-year-old boys, would stand up and blow me away with just great things. They would say, like one guy said, wouldn't it be great? You know, this guy just said, wouldn't it be great if we could all live in a time again when it would be cool to be kind? I go, man, that's a song. I'm going to steal that. I'm going to steal that and write a song. But you know, it would be good, wouldn't it? Cool to be kind. I thought, wow, because it hasn't been cool to be kind in my lifetime. Now it could be. But it was always cool in my lifetime to be the jerk. The jerk got the money and the birds. The girls, I mean. Really, you know, I mean, if you look at, if you watch those movies, I mean, I would dare to say that most people here got most of the information they got in their life off the TV and from movies, right? Really, about real life situations, because our homes don't, where we live never is kind of a real life thing. We always think that everybody forgets that every family is dysfunctional. Every family is completely nuts. Everyone's got a mad sister and a weird brother-in-law with an earring. Well, in Liverpool they all do. Anyway, I'm listening to this stuff and I go, wow, wouldn't it be great if we could be kind? And I'd never been there. It was a stunner to me that even though I was this little Catholic who was like, you know, a nice little, you know, the first Holy Communion, and I was really good friends with those priests, and if they'd wanted me to in the choir, and if I could have not been disruptive, I was a good kid. But you know, it never occurred to me that it would be nice to be, it would be better for me and probably for everybody around me if I was actually going to completely adjust my behavior. And there it is. I started to say, well, you know, this isn't going to work for you, says in the book, unless you, like, completely change everything. Well, now I'm negotiating. Well, can I still go in bars and just hang out with the lads, you know, because in my business, if I'm not there with the lads in the bar, now I'm negotiating with the sponsors. No? Okay, you're fired. And, you know, I'm slowly, slowly realizing that the only thing that can fix me up is to go for the whole thing, you know, not to be a part-timer. Which, in England, by the way, is the worst thing. If you said to somebody, oh, like a musician, he's a part-timer, it's the worst insult. But, you know, I came into this program as a part-timer. I figured I would, you know, minimum requirements. Let's see, I got by school. I got maths, I got French, I got degrees, with the minimum amount of, like, work. You know, cheating. So maybe I can cheat at this thing, you know, maybe I'll just, you know, it sounds good, 90 meetings, 90, you know, now what do I do? It's another 90 meetings, 90 days. So why don't you tell me 180 is 180 days, so I could look forward to this pleasure. So, well, the only way it's going to work for you because you're sicker than most people. I said, no, I'm not. I've got a house. And a car. I mean, I've been down the Alano Club. None of those guys have got a house. So I was clearly sicker than most, and I kept, luckily, by going to all those meetings, it was a completely changed my life because I'd never had a thought in my life. I'd never had a thought. Certainly didn't care about anybody else's business. If it wasn't my mum, my dad, my auntie, my wife, my child, my house, you weren't in the game. Get off the freeway. So now I'm looking at it and I'm going, wow, you mean if I can throw away all that behavior, I can have what these people have got? These peaceful, happy, insane people. So, I mean, insanity has never been... I think it's great to be a little bit sort of off the edge, you know. And my sponsor said, you know what, all you got to do is, like, really work this stuff. So I figured, well, you know, I'm going pretty good now. You know, I've got, like, 6 months. And I've got to do this fourth step. So I said, I'm ready for the fourth step. And he said, you work 1 hour a day for 12 days. And I said, nah, well, I'll be over later. And he lay down on the floor and laughed during my... No priest, when I lied to priest, had ever laughed. No priest, they don't laugh. They sit in the back there. I don't know what they're doing back there, but they never, ever went... Now listen, my son, you're joking. For Christ's sake! So here I am lying to my sponsor. You know, like I lie to God and my wife and my lie to everybody. And he ain't buying any of it. And of course, that doesn't make me very happy because I'm used to people just doing what I want. You know, democracy is for those other people. And then it was brought to my attention that if I wasn't prepared to, like, change the whole deal and fix everything up and get on my knees and own up to who I was, that I was probably going to drink. And I couldn't face that, you know, because I'd done so much work with people that loved me, as opposed to people I loved. Some of the people I loved, but some of the people I hated. But they were starting to like me. This new guy, who was like a little bit gentler and was letting them finish whole lines of sentences. You know, because you learn that it's an alcoholic's trait, isn't it? You go in a bar and nobody ever finishes a line, doesn't it? You know, somebody says, I went to the hockey game. Ah, it was a terrible game and he should have got through. Nobody ever. Now I'm going all the way to the end where, you know, Leclerc had scored a goal. Oh, really? And I like that person. I didn't know I would like Peter Noon. Because I never spent any time with him. Now I'm spending time. Now this is like in my first year of this thing. Now I'm spending time with myself and I'm sitting and I'm actually thinking, you know, now what will I have to do to fix all this damage? I mean, massive amounts of damage. You know, no physical stuff, but damage where, you know, just insane resentment. You know, I had a band and they despised me. You know, from, we were kids, we came up together, we came to America, all we were kids, and they hated me. Because one of the guys told me, like, that he was in AA. I said, well, what happened to you? How come you didn't call me a couple of years ago? Now I'm calling him, trying to fix up my wreckage, and I'm finding that other alcoholics hadn't called me. So, you know, that set me back a couple of weeks. And I thought, I'll show them, I'll go and have a drink. So, you know, here I am. And I went seriously into this program. And call me silly, I said, I'll do it exactly by the book. What do I have to do to get this? Because I'm scared that, you know, I hear the guys talking at the meetings and I'm not completely imbecilic. I know what will happen to me if I go out. I know what's going to happen. Because I see the guys come in and they got teeth missing. And bits of, like, their ear been bitten off. And I don't want any of that stuff. And I know that that's what happens to me because I know me better than anybody, right? So I'm saying, now I'm seriously. Now I'm really scared. Because they're telling me more will be revealed. And every time stuff is being revealed, it's stuff that I really don't want to know about myself. I want to know what 16 magazine thinks about me. You know, and what Teen magazine wants to. That's what I'm really interested in. But you know what I'm finding out is that I haven't actually been the person that my PR person would have everybody believe. You know, I've done some serious bad things to people. And I needed to fix it. And I knew that one of the best ways to fix it was to stick around and listen. You know, let people finish sentences. And I got on my knees, you know. I said that it wasn't my sponsor because I was embarrassed to tell my sponsor I wasn't moving ahead. So, I got talking to other people in the program. I said, you know, I'm really having trouble. You know, I did my fourth step and I... when they hear fourth step, it's like, it's the key word, isn't it? It's like all ears perk up. Fourth step.
I can help you with that.
You know, everybody steps forward, you know, sort the men out from the boys. You know, they all want to be there for your first baseball lesson, you know what I mean? So they all step forward. And they all kept saying the same thing, like everyone. I said, did you all guys have the same sponsor? And it was, you know, and they said, the best way, here's what I did. So tell me what you... Tell me exactly what you do, because I keep going home and I call. He says he wants 1 hour a day. And I don't have 1 hour a day. I'm so busy. You know, I have to take my daughter to school and then I have to go to the gym. And then it's lunch. So I said, well, what you want to do is get the third step prayer, read it aloud, and get on your knees and write down the first thing that you can remember ever happening to you. And oh, man. And call me in an hour. Which is a great one, because, like, usually takes you 3 days, that first hour, you know what I mean? Because it just all... It got me. And it was the most... It was better than number one records and all that stuff, because it was... I got it. And now I understood. Now I finally understood why you had to do it, you know. And it was such a relief, because I didn't know that I was wondering, what's the upside of this program? You can't drink. The meetings are fun. Fellowship's fun. But where's the upside to this? All the guys, listen, those guys in that bar down there, they seem to be having just as much fun as we are. And the upside is that if you get this program, you know, and you can, and then you get to share it. That's the cool thing. You know, and they don't want you to be a promoter of this program. But an attraction is really something that show business people understand. So, what happens is now I'm like, I'm with the big boys at the meetings.
Sure.
Right on. Here the fourth step. On your knees. Now, I'm in the big leagues. It's like Father McVeigh down there. Read that third step prayer. And I'm just quoting what the guy had told me. Work for me. How did you do it, Mr. Noon? Well, I... Feel so bad, Neil. Don't forget to start writing. Call me in an hour. And of course, that's all it is. And all this thing is this wonderful fellowship of men and women who get to share how their lives turn around, and it goes great. And it goes bad sometimes. Bad stuff happens to me sometimes. But now I think about it, I go, oh my God, this is bad stuff. Oh, this is bad stuff. This is, oh, bad stuff. Bad stuff. Now, once upon a time, bad stuff. Oh, let's go down the beach, get some blow. Never solved anything. Never ever solved any one of my problems. With those guys. With the six packs and the, you know, on the beach smoking at night. Oh, well, I know lots about sunsets, but nothing about how to work my life. So what I did was I started to think. And it's an amazing thing. It's like, and now I go to the meetings and I look at that sun and I go, incredible, I was here for a couple of months and I never knew what think meant. Now I think every day I get up and I think, and you know, I always thought I had a problem with the Roman Catholic Church, and I hear all these sort of, you know, recovered Catholic and stuff like that, and I thought I was one of those, but you know, through this program, I found my way back in there, because the Catholic Church, you know, despite all the ups, you know, everything has its goods and bads, we're living proof, right? But it's a great place to go and meditate, and I think that is also an important part of this program. They got it good in there. In those churches, it's always quiet, even like in St. Patrick's when the tourists aren't running around. Harry Mashta. I said, out of here, this is a place of God. Because they don't understand me. But you know, it's a good place for me to go now. I find, you know, I do remember my jokes about the Immaculate Conception, but now I think about it, I go, hey, it's all possible. Look, I made it through this. I should be dead. You know, I'm not supposed to be here. So that all starts to make sense to me, because it's a great place for guys and girls like us to go, and people will leave you alone and let you finish. Because I need to meditate. You can't meditate. The phone rings, doesn't it? Cell phones ring. People calling from... Man, leave me alone. But you know, so I found my way back there. You know, even I find it much easier to get on my knees there than I do than at the airport. People think you're weird at the airport. I want to tell you, though, if you go in so-called third world countries, it's not unusual to see people on their knees at the airport. It's a good place to be if you're afraid of flying. On your knees, man. Because you know. And it isn't unusual. And I'm going to start doing it on the airport. I'm going to start getting... It'll probably scare people, won't it? He knows something about the plane. He knows. He'll be asking me, how many frequent flyers have you... How many frequent flyer miles have you got? You're like having 25 years. But you know, it's... I'm not afraid of getting on my knees, but you know what? You go in these Muslim countries and the guys are on their knees, and those are the people... I used to pity those people. I said, what a schmuck. Look at him. They're all on there. Why didn't they... Fly? You know what? Religious people got it, man. The people I used to go... I used to look at those pictures in my school and I go, look at the guy's face there. St. Francis. His giblets are coming out of his side. The Roman's got a few, like, bits of his, like, liver, onions, on a spear. And he's got this stupid look on his face. I know that look now. I know that look from here, man. I learned what they were thinking right here. That's a good look. Now I understand. Because you need to have a lot of courage to believe in God, especially nowadays. People think you're weird if you believe in God. They go, what's wrong with him? I hope he's not going to talk to me about it. Hey, listen, believe me, I used to sit on planes and I was an abusive drinker. I would abuse alcohol. I wasn't going to sit there and have the wine. Oh, I'll have the Chardonnay. Get the bottle. The gin. The gin! Now! Guys used to try and talk to me on the plane. You know. Leave me alone, will you? I'm a Chippendale stripper. No guy will talk to Chippendale stripper. No guys. Flight attendants like it. But guys used to talk to me on the plane. And they would talk to me about this. You know, because I was a bit of a giveaway, you know, 6:30 in the morning, the LA-Dallas flight. And I used to say, oh, they probably pass the basket around, right, after 10 minutes. It's probably all about, oh, God, they've got God in there. I'm out of here. You know, I went to Australia. Now I go to meetings everywhere because I promised myself I would make a meeting every day. So I go to Australia, and the guy that I'd never met gives me a list of all these Australian insane people that I've got to call when I get to Melbourne, and they take me to meetings, and I have this whole new world of people that I didn't know. Brand new friends. Nice people. Not drunks and bloody drug addicts who, like, they're boring drug addicts, man. They fall asleep. You can always steal their women. I mean... Eric Clapton's into women. Well, now he's got rid of the nods, he can probably keep a few for more than a day or two. I meet incredible people. I go to meetings all over the world. I go to Australia and there's people there waiting for me. People who, you know, they don't care about me. They care about me, the alcoholic. They don't care that I was in this rock and roll band in the 60s and I own a house and a car. They're just great, cool people to hang out. Everywhere I go in the world is a meeting. I go in Hawley, Pennsylvania. A meeting. I've got to go to a meeting. My sponsor said I have to go to a meeting. There's a meeting in Hawley, Pennsylvania. Coolest people I've ever met in my life. Much better than the people I used to meet at the Marriott bar. Much better people. My sponsor said, go coach. You meet much nicer people at the back of the plane. It's not true. Guys who play for the Bulls are sitting up front. And anyway, there it is. I mean, it's been a wonderful, wonderful experience for me to be in this fellowship because I never was at home anywhere. I was always beside my shoes. You know, I was this guy standing there going, if only I could be there, I'd be comfortable. Or maybe here. Or maybe here. Or maybe a guitar. Maybe a low down here. Maybe. Never was comfortable. I came, like from the very first time I said, oh, these are my people. I felt comfortable tonight. I'm supposed to be nervous. I was nervous at the beginning. But I feel comfortable with you people. It's my people. You know me. I know you. You know me. It's like our family. That's where the fellowship comes from. And I never had any of that. My fellowship was other people. I didn't trust people who didn't drink or do drugs. I didn't know how to relate to them. This is the first time I've ever had intelligent conversations with people where I've let them finish their part of the story first. Now, can you believe this? I'm from this mad Irish insane family who, like, when you saw a carving knife, it was not for the bird. Those Christmas things were not places that you would want a knife around. In America, they get the knife out for Thanksgiving.
Oh, the knives are out!
Irish families don't have knives at parties because there's always the brother-in-law with the earring. And the tattoo. Where was I? I have completely lost it now. I've gone, well, anyway, completely lost myself. I was right back with my family in Liverpool there. The fights. Here I am at home anyway. I feel very comfortable. And you know what happened is that now when I'm on the road and I'm with other people, I let them say their thing. We now are so relieved that we all interact as people on the road that we now are able to discuss politics and religion. How about that? Did you ever meet an alcoholic who was drinking who went politics or religion? It was like, that was the beginning of the fighting, wasn't it, really? You couldn't sort of start. Actually, in America now, everybody talks about the stock market as if it's religion, don't they? It's like, but we can now actually consciously talk to each other about things that we never dared go to because there were certain trigger things for me where I would lose it if somebody started to talk about God. I was afraid of talking about God because I knew this guy was there, but I could jump out of his way every time I got a drink. Every time. If some thought came to me that this is like, you know, the conscience thing. Everybody has a conscience, whether you're a Catholic, a Muslim, whatever you are, you got a conscience because you just automatically get one. I could lose my conscience. I didn't have a conscience because if God sent me like a little message, I have a drink. He'll get rid of God. This, I won't be able to think about God or anything that's got reason or rationale. I'll have a drink and then I won't have to go there anymore. So now I can go in all these places that, you know, I was never conscious, I was never capable, actually I'm still not capable of a very deep thought. You know, that my greatest idea was a song. When I was a little boy, I had this idea of a song that had no rhymes. And I was 50 years old. And it was a huge hit, so like 7 million records. And I was 50 years old when I realized that nobody had ever noticed that it didn't have any rhymes. Can you believe it? This song was called Mrs. Brown, You've Got a Lovely Daughter is a song. I'm just going to go, because I'm telling this guy, you know, well, it's so cool, you know, like I'm with the, you know, the elite rock people. And I'm saying, oh, yeah, I had, well, I did that in the 60s. What do you mean? Well, I did the song with no rhymes in the 60s. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. It's like, Mrs. Brown, You Got a Lovely Daughter, girls as sharp as her are something rare, but it's sad, she doesn't love me now. She's made it clear enough, it ain't no good to pine. Which I think is hilarious, but nobody ever noticed it didn't have rhymes. And I'm very disappointed in all of you. But back to this. You know, I'm 50 years old and I finally realized I'm having a conversation. Because I never went, deep thought wasn't one of the things that I wanted to ever do. You know, because there was too much. It's dangerous to think, isn't it? Really? Seriously, I mean, it's dangerous. There's a lot of danger involved because while you're in there with yourself, there's all kinds of pieces of myself that I really didn't like. And I didn't want you, any of you guys, I don't want anybody, including my wife, to know who that guy was. Because I felt that guy was kind of pitiful. That's the guy my wife married. But I didn't know that she knew who I was. I thought that I'd fixed it. You know, I could... Confidence trick. Flim flam. I figured I'd shone the whole world on. And bit by bit, I realized that, you know what? I'm okay. You know, my wife likes me. Sometimes my clothes are in the garden when I get home, but that's something else. My stereo and some of the furniture that I own. No, only kidding. My wife loves me. I have a great family. I have a great life within this within this program. And it's definitely a life deal. You know, I was afraid at the beginning that I didn't have the actual equipment to make this a full-time deal. You know, I thought that my life, as I'd run it, was far too important to give it away to become, you know, because they told me that I have to, like, completely change my old, I mean, not some of it, change some of it, you have to change some of it, it's like half measures weren't going to work. And I was going, you know, for a while there, I was going, well, you know, I could change that, and I could change that, and I could change that, but I'm not going to change that. That's me. You take away that, and I'll be nothing. And he goes, ah, yeah, that's what I'd like it to hear. Will you call me when you've become nothing so we can get down to work here? And of course there it was, you know, and by me asking questions all the time, and my sponsor was kind of knew how to get me in trouble by telling me to, whenever I thought something at a meeting, I had to stand up and say it. Which is a great way of getting yourself sorted out really quick, you know, because a lot of people wait for me outside meetings in Santa Barbara. And, you know, I learned, that was a great way to learn humility. Messing with those guys who'd been working a long time on the program and thinking you'd sort of found the quick way through it. And now, like I say, call me silly, the book and the way that they've been doing it for a while is for me the only way to do it. I mean, I've got to go buy the book, which has never been my thing. You know, I always wanted to be the odd man out and the thing, but in this game, you go buy the book and then you find out who you are. And the humility thing confused me, and I asked that question at a meeting, and this old guy who was around right at the very beginning of this fellowship gave me this little... See, because if you're stupid enough to say what you think all the time, which is one of the brand new lessons for me in here, don't just like leave and say it to friends. Just when it's your turn, you say it, whatever's on your mind. Well, I could never figure humility. Humility was something that I went, well, you know, if you look at the countries where humility is like part of the deal, those people are like getting bombed and shot regularly while they're on their knees. And so I wasn't afraid. I was afraid of humility because when you think about it, we've all told all the information I got, every single piece of information I got before I got that big book was the opposite of what it says in the book. Nothing in there fits what I want to do. It's all the opposite of the way I see it, the way Bill sees it. What about as Pete sees it? That'd be a bestseller too. But I struggled with humility because, first of all, it is not a requirement in show business, humility. It hasn't worked for anybody, humility, in the music business anyway. And it was explained to me that humility in Muslim countries means, you know, having been willing to learn. And I go, okay, then I got humility. I'm willing to learn because I know nothing about this thing. And he goes, great, now we can move on. Now you're nothing. You've got humility. Let's get on with the work. And, you know, when they told me at the beginning that the quit and drinking was the easy part, I said, how dare you? How dare you? You just ruined it for me now. I was in here. I thought, you told me all I had to do was stop drinking and go to meetings. Now you tell me that's the easy part. And the guy said, well, unfortunately, you when you came in here, you were just a drunk asshole. Now you're just an asshole. And we began to work on me. And I was lucky because I got somebody who has all this time to bother me. I mean, this guy has a cell phone. I call him up from the plane.
There's a guy sitting next to me. He's got a book and it's stuff.
I mean, I got a guy who cares about my life. Not somebody I know. Somebody who chose to be the person who would like to offer me some assistance. And I've learned about humility. And you know what? It ain't bad. I never had any of this equipment to wander around this world and feel comfortable. I was always uncomfortable. I played like the most happy-go-lucky, I was going to say gay debonair, but gay doesn't work in this country. But you know, know, this sort of happy-go-lucky, friendly, just having such a good time in this world. And you know what? Nobody's ever come up with the pain measurer. You know? Somebody says, oh, I've got this terrible toothache. Oof, my toothaches are much worse than yours. It's the same with pain. Pain, there is no measurement for pain. You know, you hear these terrible stories of kids who do terrible things to each other. Well, we can't measure what pain they've got. Nobody knew how much pain I had. Even I don't know how much pain I have had. All I know is how much pleasure I get from being able to deal with the next thing at a time and dealing with, I guess, the next best thing. And trying to keep it simple because, you know, as you know from Henry VIII's profound statement, sir, my thing. You know, the second verse and then all together now, about my specialities. Profound thinking is my thing. No, I'm not being serious. But you know, all the stuff that I've learned in here is making me happy, and the damage that I've fixed, all the people around me have now become, I've changed them as well, do you know what I mean? And I'm not angry all the time. I was a pain in the ass to everybody because I thought it was my job to be mean and nasty and uncivilized, because the mean, nasty, uncivilized people got everything they wanted. They always got the seat on the plane that I wanted. They always got the best suite in the hotel. They always got the good stuff in my head. But you know what? I don't need any of that anymore. I just want to get on with this new life. I mean, it's all new for me. This is the first time I've ever done this. This is all completely new for me. Every time I walk into a room at an AA thing, I it's a whole new wow. It's a buzz. It's a great buzz. But you know what? I'm still not stupid enough to think that I can get away with not coming. You know, a lot of guys, I keep running into these guys who tell me, you know, well, I only go to 3 meetings a week now. I go, wow, that's really, yeah, I thought you were insane when you were shooting stuff between your toes. But only going to 3 meetings a week, man, that's really scary stuff. Because I know I can't do that. I can't do that because I know that that isn't enough for me. I need every day, I need a little shot every day. And I pray to God that I need that every day. That I want to go every day, forever. Because it's only one day at a time, but you know, you accumulate all those days. And it's a celebration. You know, I get all teary. I turn into I turn into my mother. I'm sitting there and I hear 11 months and I go, oh God, I remember 11 months. It's insane, isn't it? That must be me. My sponsor, when I first started, I said, you know, well, this is what happens. When I'm at home, I'm completely logical, and I drink the red wine, and sometimes I have a beer in the morning, and I just live this perfectly natural life. But when I'm on the road, man, I go nuts. And I'm on 11th Street, an ATM machine at 4 a.m. in the morning with a drug dealer. And he says, well, you know what? When you're at home, you're like your father. And when you're on the road, you like your mother. I said, oh Christ, where do I have to sign to stop drinking right now? But I didn't want to be like my mother, you know, because my mother is the drunk in the family. My father's been in this program for a long time. I had never listened to my father. What does he know? You know what I mean? I never got anything. I misunderstood completely. Because, you know, he says, oh, you're just not ready. What do you mean I'm not ready? I'm more ready than you are ready. I wasn't ready until it was my time to come and show up. I just wasn't ready. And I wasn't ready that time. So I went out and checked out the lads, see who was still alive, all my rebel friends. And I came back. And you know, nobody, they knew I'd been out. But they didn't say, you've been out? You can't come anymore. No, you can't come to the Alano Club anymore. None of us have ever been out. We've all taken a vow that we will never go out. And if we did, we wouldn't tell you. So, you know, I went back and I guess I was more ready. And I, you know, got to go to my meeting every day, and I got to read my book, and I've got to get on my knees a lot, because it doesn't fit in my world, the knee thing. You know, I want to be up there with the crucifix. You know, I don't want the knee thing. And I got to do it, you know, so it's a great learning thing. Every day I have to get on my knees and I feel like such an idiot. I get down there and, you know, the minute I'm down, I go, hey, this is a good spot. Great spot to think, you know, and humility is a wonderful thing for me because it's a brand new place. It's a brand new place, like a whole new experience. Oh, okay, I can talk to you. Listen, I used to talk to him one-on-one. You know, they had designed drugs in the 60s so you could meet God. Now you just get to talk to him. It's true. How's Liz? You, hey! Now, I wish you all a great other day today. I know I'm not going to have a drink today. It's too late. Closed in England already. But I wish you all whatever is your destiny. And I hope it's staying sober. God bless you. Thank you very much for having me.